ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $14.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Xander Demos electrifies us with his heavy metal guitar. Author Victoria Howard gives us the ins and outs of online dating, and we feature the audio drama We're Alive, based on the popular podcast, right after the news you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Cyrus Emerson. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Well, after a hotly contested five-way auction, Jack Fogg, editorial director at Century, has acquired UK and Commonwealth rights to Wool and the Shift trilogy by Hugh Howey. From Jenny Meyer at the Jenny Meyer Literary Agency, on behalf of Christine Nelson, president of the Nelson Literary Agency. Much like E.L. James's 50 Shades trilogy, Wool has become a word-of-mouth sensation since the author self-published on Amazon.com, garnering over 600 five-star reviews and selling over 140,000 copies through ebook in just under 6 months. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, what do you think about that, man?
That is pretty remarkable.
Incredible. It's kind of like the YouTube channels, you know? You just put something out there. You put it out yourself. You know, you're not waiting for like the upper echelons to okay you and give you a green light. You're just doing it yourself. It's great.
Yeah, you know, the again, we talked about it with the internet, giving everybody a voice, you know, and this guy, it's great that, you know, he did this and he made $1 million himself promoting himself just as an ebook, and then Random House picked it up because it's going to go even bigger. And, but the thing is, you know, when they interviewed him, they asked the guy, you know, what's your strategy, you know, this and that. And he said, I wrote a good book.
A nice element.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, you can, you know, we've got all these ways, you know, that you can get your stuff out there these days. But the bottom line still is, you know, you've got to write a good song. You've got to write a good book.
You've got to have a good
radio show. You've got to have, you know, a good TV show.
Well, Jack Fogg, the editorial director at Century, who got the rights, what he said about Wool, he said, Wool drew me in from the first page because of the book's compassion and care for its characters. So that kind of goes on. You know, you wrote a good book, but then I guess the characters, they just, you know, you feel like you know them. They're like your family. You have like a
Oh, I will tell you this, though. For them, here's one thing the guy did do from a marketing point of view is he didn't sell the book outright, buy the book outright. He sold it a chapter at a time.
Oh.
Like a serial.
Yeah, it's like the old days.
Smart.
So it was 99 cents for a chapter, right? So you, for 99 cents, you're like, it's a buck, you know, whatever. You know,
I'll check it out.
And you read it, and you're like, oh, I can't wait for the next one. And then
you get hooked.
And the next thing you know.
Yeah.
You need it.
It's an addiction.
Yeah. Gotta have it. I can't wait to read this one. I love science fiction, especially dystopian future novels, which
what
this
did you call
is.
Me?
Dystopian. I love that. Yeah, I love it. It's, you know, like the Hunger Games, you know, it's one of those ones set in kind of a bleak mankind's future. And I think it looks great. I can't wait to read it.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Has the movie rights already been picked up by 20th Century Fox?
Oh my gosh.
And the odd thing is, even though there's been deals struck in the UK and all around the world, Spain, Brazil, Taiwan, Poland, China, Germany. He still hasn't found a partnership in the U.S. So they kind of closed it off. They haven't sold the rights yet because of the royalty rate they're being offered.
Interesting.
That's incredible. That's amazing. I love that. I love stories like that. It gives you a lot of hope, you know? Like, if you're writing something, you know, it can get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Do it. You know, like Charlie said, you know, you make a good product. You build a better mousetrap, the world will be the path to your door. You write a good book, it's not going to sit. I know people that have written things that have done well, and I've known people that have written things that have done poorly, you know, and it really is about the quality of the product.
Right. You know? But it's about letting the people decide as opposed to letting some editor in some closed office that, you know, you don't even see. You just send out all of these envelopes and envelopes and just get these rejection letters. You know what I mean? It's like actually you have this opportunity to just let the fans decide.
Well, and that's the great thing about the internet is the ability to get it out there.
Yeah.
You know, for a number of years, you know, your biggest barrier to entry was the publishing, you know, getting it actually printed. Now
you
can make
a
product. Yeah. Do you have an agent? Do you have a publisher? You have an editor, all of that stuff. And now you can literally do all of those things yourself and get it out there for the public to judge the merits of the product as it is.
Right.
You know, before a lot of what we were given was the things that editors and publishers chose, you know, you're going to like this, so we're going to give it to you. You know, you didn't get the stuff that, you know, may have been great, but.
Yeah, who knows what we missed?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if we wait long enough, you know, everything comes back around again, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe all those rejected books will be on a, they'll be self-published through Amazon now, too.
There you go.
You never know.
Exactly. Quite possible.
Well, speaking of the internet and putting things out and getting things out there, you know, there's Twitter. You can always Twitter anything you like. And
Tweet.
So Conan O'Brien was on Twitter and somebody realized that somebody was inviting him to a wedding. So what did he do? He surprised the bride and groom and crashed their wedding. Wes and Victoria Hoffman were having a wedding at reception at the Four Seasons in Atlanta. And one of the bridesmaids learned that Conan was staying at the same hotel while he taped a show during the NCAA Final Four. So she tweeted him, like kind of as a one-off, like, eh, maybe, you know, maybe he'll come. She tweeted him an invite on the odd chance, eh, maybe he'll take notice and join the festivities. Well, he did. And
that'd be a nice surprise.
Yeah, it would be amazing. The groom told HLN News he just walked up and introduced himself. And we were like, wow, he's a really, really nice guy. So Conan chatted with the bride and groom, talked with all the guests and posed for pictures. And at one point in the evening, the bride even plopped down on his lap.
Ooh, I wonder how the new husband felt.
Oh, my. But then Conan, what did he do? He took out his phone and showed her photos of his wife and kids, telling her, this is the best part. It's all about family.
Aww.
So it's like, that's what he did when she sat on his... Oh, never mind.
going
to the dark places. Yeah.
She pulled out her phone.
This is my family. These are my kids. I guess he was having a good time. But he didn't leave until he showed the groom how to properly cut a rug. So can you imagine first dance with Conan O'Brien at your wedding?
Yeah, that's kind of trippy. You know, he probably, you know, when she was sitting on his lap and she was, you know, talking to him and he just like took out his phone and says like, you know, well, these are pictures of my family. I think what he really meant to take out was his bacon flavored condom.
Yes, well, there is a new product. It has the slogan, make your meat look like meat.
Oh my God.
Yes. God. Yep. Bacon condoms. It looks
finally,
like
somebody said it.
Looks like bacon, tastes like bacon. It was really only a matter of time because there are now.
Really? It was only a matter of
time. Yeah, don't you just happen to think about it? Inevitable.
Finally, somebody did it.
People have been waiting.
Bacon on the beach.
Well, it's funny because, you know, they're glow-in-the-dark condoms, scotch whiskey-flavored Mick condoms, and dinosaur-shaped condoms, and even condoms printed with ruler measurements, probably for men who feel like they have something to prove.
Oh, that's funny.
Very classy.
Yeah.
I told you it was this. I told you.
See?
Yeah. Mine's in the metric system.
Oh, my God. J&D's Foods, whose corporate mission statement is Everything Should Taste Like Bacon has announced its latest product. It's a condom that's patterned to look like a pinkish red slab of bacon. Oh, and it's coated with a flavored lubricant called Bacon Lube.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah, the company claims that the condoms are made in America of the highest quality latex and rigorously tested to help ensure the utmost reliability and safety when you're making bacon.
No!
Yes, it's true.
Well, for all of our listeners out there around the world, man, only in America, baby. Only in America.
Yeah.
See, I was with you at first until I found out it's a food company making a bacon-flavored condom. If it was a condom company making a bacon-flavored condom, I'd feel much more comfortable. Well, I don't know.
They actually have bacon-flavored envelopes and bacon lip balm and bacon-y sandwich spread and scented sunscreen. Huh. This is the company that – so they obviously have a little fetish.
Well, it was like the Jack in the Box commercial, you know, where the guy marries bacon.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Everything Should Taste Like Bacon. That's a pretty good corporate, you know, corporate slogan.
Yeah.
Bacon, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, well, I don't think this would go over so well with
the Orthodox Jewish community.
Yes, I have a feeling that might be so not such a popular.
I have a feeling it wouldn't be a big seller at the kosher market.
Well, I don't know, dude. I'll tell you what. I'm sure they would come up with a kosher bacon flavor.
But unfortunately,
it just tastes. It just tastes like kosher bacon, right?
Yeah, it's a kosher bacon flavor condom. You have been blessed, my son.
Well, they're not putting real bacon grease on the condom. It's just flavored.
It's
flavored.
So they would still be able to use it.
They might not cover bacon condoms on The Tonight Show. God, I hope not. Well, you never know. I mean, it's late enough, right?
Yeah, they can get away with a lot more when it's that late.
Yes. Well, it's official, though. Jimmy Fallon is going to replace Jay Leno as The Tonight Show host in the spring of 2014.
Yay, yeah. I like Jimmy Fallon a lot.
I do, too. Yeah.
NBC confirmed the worst-kept secret in Hollywood, announcing that Jimmy Fallon will succeed him. And as part of the transition, Tonight Show will return to New York. It's the original 30 Rock home and will be executive produced by Lorne Michaels.
Wow.
That's exciting. Going to have The Tonight Show back in NYC. Really going head-to-head with David Letterman, just across the way on Broadway there.
Oh, boy.
And Leno said in a statement, "Congratulations, Jimmy. I hope you're as lucky as me and hold on to the job until you're the old guy. If you need me, I'll be at the garage." Jay Leno's only 62, so, I mean, this deal, I mean, we all know what happened with Conan O'Brien, speaking of. We just talked about Conan.
Yeah. You never know.
You never know. You might get bored.
Yeah, had Conan went from The Tonight Show to Atlanta wedding crashing.
Yeah.
The demise.
So Jimmy said that he's really excited to host a show that starts today instead of tomorrow. What is it, like 12:30?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Christy, speaking of David Letterman, right?
Hmm.
When this announcement came out, David Letterman's mother called him on his show while he was taping live.
Oh, really?
And they put it through and they go, "Dave, it's your mom, right?" And he goes, "Yeah, mom." And she goes, "Son, I'm so sorry to hear you got passed over again."
Oh, no.
Ouch.
Oh, poor Letterman. Steve Burke, who's the CEO of NBC Universal, said, "We're purposefully making this change now that Jay is number one on the top here. Just as Jay replaced Johnny Carson when he was number one." So Jimmy Fallon is going to be the sixth host. Can you believe that? This show has been running for so many years. There's only been six hosts.
That was very consistent. A lot of longevity.
We are mesmerized.
Yeah. Mesmerized.
It makes me wonder how much more time David Letterman has, because with ABC moving
Jimmy Kimmel,
you know, to in that same time slot, and now Jimmy Fallon, you know, both a couple of younger guys, younger than Dave anyway. You know, and everybody's always going after that 20 to 40, you know, male demographic.
Right.
How long is David Letterman going to stay there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been doing the show for, I mean, a long, long time. So, I mean, yeah, you never know.
Well, he still does great TV. Just the other day, he had on Lindsay Lohan. And,
oh, really?
That was a funny interview, yeah.
So, yeah, he's still up there. Even
Letterman's only 66, so... You know,
he's still got a
he's
lot
got
of
a
years
few more years before he can collect Social Security. I think, isn't it 70? Or is it 65? Do you think he's already collecting a check?
Hopefully, if he's making six figures.
He's always about to collect Social Security.
He is at 66. He's six. How old are you?
65 and a half, I believe.
You can start collecting Social Security at 62.
At 62? Really? Oh. No, they moved it up to 65, I thought, for the lowest 62. One. Oh, well, there you go.
And if you're a millionaire, you shouldn't be able to collect
it. Social Security, you can start collecting at 62, but the age they want you to start collecting at is 70.
Mm. I see. Well, maybe he'll put it off.
But actually, technically, you can start collecting Social Security when you're 10 years old.
Oh, right. Well,
it depends if you have a need.
Right, if you qualify.
Right.
Yeah. Like if you have a
disability. Which I would think Letterman wouldn't qualify.
Probably not, yeah, considering the level of his
Since he still has all of his hair.
Almost all of it.
Almost all of it. And he still runs out every night onto that stage.
See, I never understood Jay Leno was the top slot. I always preferred Dave. Who's your favorite?
I like Jay myself.
Yeah?
Jack Parr.
Jack Parr.
Conan O'Brien.
There you go.
Actually, it would be Johnny Carson. I think was the best host. It's some weird wild stuff. It really is.
I went to see a Jimmy Kimmel taping, and it was so much fun. He really is very entertaining. So
yeah,
it'd be Jimmy versus Jimmy, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah, it will be Jimmy versus Jimmy. Yeah, right. I like Jimmy Fallon. I like Jimmy Kimmel, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think they're both very funny.
I think Jimmy Kimmel, you know, was actually funnier when he was dating Sarah Silverman.
Yeah, that's right.
I would agree with that, too. Yeah.
And seriously, I mean, he was a lot more edgier, and he was a lot funnier.
Yeah, during the Man Show days.
The Man Show.
Yeah, getting established.
Jimmy Kimmel show.
He was working for K-Rock down in L.A. During that period, you know, was when he and Adam Carolla.
When Matt Damian and Sarah Silverman did that parody.
Oh, Matt Damon and Sarah Silverman.
And Sarah Silverman did that.
Jimmy Kimmel, and that leads into the whole rivalry with Matt Damon.
And then Jimmy Kimmel came out with his video with Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
Did you see last year for the Oscars, Kimmel did the movie, and it had all those stars in it. And, you know, it was like, bunch of different stars. And then at the last minute, there's Matt Damon, and he's got him dressed up like the grape from the Fruit of the Loom. You know, and he's like, this is it? This is the part you give me? And then he swears at him and walks off. Gabrielle Cinebe was in it. It was a bunch
of nice.
Yeah. You know, I just think Sarah Silverman is really funny, and I think she brings out, you know, a lot in people. And I'm with you on this, Chrissy. You know, she pushes the envelope, but she does it in such a way that you're just like, she is Jewish, and she starts making all these jokes about the Holocaust in her her stand-up routine.
Yeah.
I know. And you like, you almost feel like you can't laugh, but you are. You can't help it because she's so funny, but she makes it okay to laugh at it. She's brilliant.
That's what she likes to do, is like offend people as much as possible to push them to that point of laughter.
Yeah, her TV show was really, really funny.
And Jared, you made a good point too, because she comes off so bloody innocent.
Yeah.
I was not surprised when I saw her on, she was with Matt Damon, as a matter of fact, on the Graham Norton show in England.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah. And those two of them were on, and they were teasing, it wasn't Matt Damon, it was Mark Wahlberg. And they were teasing Mark Wahlberg about the movie he did about the bear, right? Ted?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how he did the cartoon voices and stuff like that. And Sarah Silverman was going like, yeah, that's so funny. You know, talk like the bear for us and stuff like that, right? So they were teasing him. And then he said, and I didn't even know this, he goes, well, who are you to talk? Sugar Rush?
and it's like, Wreck-It Ralph.
And I didn't know. She was the voice for Sugar Rush.
Yeah, she was the little girl in Wreck-It Ralph. She was the voice of that.
Funny.
So it was Mark Wahlberg, or was it Seth MacFarlane? Because he did the voice of the bear.
No, Mark Wahlberg. And he said he did the voice for the bear for he talked like it. She said during the movie he did Seth MacFarlane did the voice for the toys.
Right.
And then Sarah Silverman was giving him a hard time because they have a Sugar Rush toy, and they had the Sugar Rush toy playing, right? And they were asking her, Graham Norton asked her, did you do the voice for the toy? And she goes, of course I didn't. She goes, come on, Wahlberg, it took like 10 minutes.
When going back to Jimmy Fallon, one interesting thing about this whole Tonight Show is that Lorne Michaels is going to join him.
Right.
Of course, they work together
on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
Plus, I think Lorne Michaels is going to be like, you know, at some point he's going to have to own NBC.
Yeah, he's got his fingers in everything. He does everything.
He didn't even want to work in New York. I was listening to an interview with Alec Baldwin and him on Alec Baldwin's podcast, and he's a Canadian, and he wanted to be like the Canadian guy. Like, he just wanted to be in Canada, you know, Canada, you know.
Lorne Michaels.
Right. Yeah. And stay there and, you know, and do comedy and TV and produce.
Like in Toronto or someplace
right,
like that.
Right. But when it came down to it and he was thinking about, okay, well, like, you know, famous painters or, you know, anybody who is great that you ever heard of, they didn't necessarily have to be in their country. You know, they moved outside and they worked with other people. And so he ended up taking the job at NBC to do Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. So Jimmy, if you come back to New York, you can just take cabs everywhere. It's safer.
That's good. That's a good one.
Well, if that job doesn't work out for him, maybe he could get a job doing voiceovers for robocalls.
Oh, yeah, for those robocall machines?
Yeah, he, it would be fun to hear
that
voice.
That would be fun to hear Jimmy Fallon's voice on a robocall. I might actually take one.
I certainly would. I don't care what Jimmy Fallon has to say. Hey, I don't want to get a call from a robocall machine.
You know, be like, press one for Jimmy Fallon, press two Ooh. For Jay Leno.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Oh, a way to vote for who you want to stay on The Tonight Show. Well, robocalls are, no matter what they are, they're very annoying. If you don't know what a robocall is, consider yourself lucky. Robocalls are the next generation of telemarketers, but instead of a human being calling homes one by one from a nondescript, dirty office building, robocalls are automated sales pitches that target cell phones at a rate of thousands of calls per minute. This problem has troubled the Federal Trade Commission so much, which has been fielding more complaints than the O2 Arena after Justin Bieber showed up late for a performance in London. Unable to solve the problem alone, big shock, the FTC threw up its hands and offered a $50,000 prize to anyone who could stop the swarm of unwanted calls. Mm. There were two winners of the FTC Robocall Challenge who split the $50,000 prize. One of them, Aaron Foss, joined us to discuss his creation, Nomo Robo. Simply put, Nomo Robo automatically recognizes an incoming robocall before your phone rings, intercepts it, and hangs it up before your phone rings. It's like the Israeli Iron Dome for unwanted calls. You know when you were a kid and, you know, the phone would – remember when phones hung on walls? Like they had
yeah.
like
lines, right?
And the phone would ring and you'd all race. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it. And somebody would pick it up and say, oh, it's for me, and everybody else hang up. Well, that exists already in the current phone system. So he said what I thought, well, what if one of the phones that picked up that looked at it and it was a robocall would answer it before anyone else got to the phone? So essentially the system recognizes it's a robocall and hangs it up before it even bothers you with a ring.
Oh, how cool nice. Is that? Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's no release date yet for the Nomo Robo, but if there's a sign-up sheet, somebody please get it for me so I can get the first unit off the line.
No more Romo.
Unless
no more
it's Jimmy
Romo.
Fallon.
No yeah. more Robo.
No more. Is that what the Dallas Cowboys yes.
I
know,
Chrissy, I was thinking the same thing. No more Romo.
No more Romo.
Well, today's kids will never know the feeling of slamming their phone.
Yeah,
shut.
They still
now
say
all they do is they have to
the
poke their phone in kind right. of an angry rage. You can't hang up.
Yeah, people still use the term yeah. "hang." He hung up on me, but they don't know what "hang up" even means. Yeah. That it used yeah. to actually sit on a receiver.
So like, yo, yeah. You know, slam if I had a old-fashioned phone, I'd hang up on your ass.
I'd slam
now.
The phone.
Yeah. Instead, I'm gonna poke and really hard. Yeah,
boom. That's it, man. I'm sending you a tweet.
Well, you know, it's funny. On my TV, I have it set up so, like, when the phone rings, that the phone number actually comes up on the television with a number.
That oh, that's awesome. You have, like, a combination, like, phone,
yeah,
internet,
yeah, so it's like the
TV.
One of those triple whatever those things are. And
It's called three-way.
Yeah. Hey-o.
Darling.
And, oh, my. And
oh,
so, yeah,
my.
So I'll, if
oh,
the
gosh,
one the phone
oh,
rings,
darling.
I can see, like, oh,
that,
it's an 800
Chrissy?
Number. Sorry?
You guys got any bacon?
Yeah. I'm frying up in a pan.
But what were you
yeah,
saying?
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So I don't have to answer the phone. Of course, I have to listen to it ring until the machine picks up. But, you know, that's it.
Small price.
Answering
to
machine.
Small
yeah,
price
that's
to pay.
Another classic right there.
Yeah, the answering yeah. machine. It's not a machine. It's voicemail. But actually, we've had this voicemail for like 3 years or something, and I've never called to find out what the password is. So there's 3 years of messages on there that I've never gotten.
Oh my gosh.
answered them.
Chrissy, this is your mother. You need to call me.
Come on again.
Chrissy, it's Publisher's Clearinghouse. Why aren't you calling us back? We have your giant check.
Yeah, Chrissy, this is the Hoboken Police Department. You left your purse down at Club 21.
For the 100th time, this is your mom again.
Chrissy, I always wanted to tell you, I have a crush on you.
Chrissy, it's Lauren Michaels. We wanted you to host the show, but you didn't get back to us, so we're just going to go with Jimmy Fallon, so thank you. Bye.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, we listened to the messages.
Yeah, we listened to your messages. You know, sometimes you just want to know what the hell is going on, man, and you just don't know where to find it. You're like, where can I find this kind of information out?
Well, I know where we can go.
Jerry Renfro, and now you know. Let me tell you, America is a nation of very trendy people. We're always looking forward, always trying to find ways to improve our lives and to build a better mousetrap. You know, they say build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. So we embrace pretty much everything that comes down the line, from acid wash jeans to gasoline powered pogo sticks. It's true. It was a real product. Now banned, but it was real. So in addition to being on the cutting edge, a number of people in this country are also growing bigger. So when it comes to the Battle of the Bulge, not the World War II battle, I'm talking about the combating larger waistlines, we as a nation are always looking for the next big thing in weight loss and exercise routines. So today I wanted to show you some of the more unusual workout routines that are popular right now.
You're going to show us?
I'm not going to show you.
Okay, we're going to videotape this one.
No, I will describe
He's
them.
He's going to do a demonstration of each one.
No. All right, so you remember Tae Bo, right? The kickboxing thing, that was big. And then came Zumba. That was a big thing.
I heard of that.
The new big thing is Bollywood dancing.
I like the name.
Yeah, in case you don't know, Bollywood is Hollywood and Bombay. You know, it's where the Indian movies come from. Yeah. They call it Bollywood. And there are videos on YouTube and other places that you can get featuring instructors kind of reenacting famous dance moves from India's finest films and music videos. In case you don't know, Bollywood's kind of it seems to be like a combination of musicals from the 60s and breakdancing from the 80s. Kind of a mixture of those two things. This is my opinion.
I've been to that party.
Yeah, I have too. Another growing trend is the thug or prison workout program.
What?
Touted as routines from the street, these workouts include things like turning a kid's jungle gym at the park into a pull-up, push-up, sit-up station, and lifting other people in park benches and garbage cans and things like that. Because really, who wants to try and lift a simple object designed to be lifted repeatedly like a free weight when you could be bench pressing your neighbor?
That is so boring.
Exactly. Right.
So
but if you grab your neighbor
ago.
Unawares and huck him up. You know?
Have you seen
my
neighbor?
That's what I saw.
I think she weighs about maybe 25 pounds.
My personal favorite is the circus circuit. A number of gyms across the country are starting to offer trapeze workouts. The workouts involve hanging on a trapeze, doing a series of plank maneuvers, upper and lower body. Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to be a trapeze artist? The only problem is they generally do them about 5 inches off the ground. So you don't get that flying through the air with the greatest of ease. You just get the workout part.
Which is probably a little safer.
But you can, you can be like, and now appearing at the circus.
And one other trend. If there's one thing Americans love more than a double cheeseburger with a large fry and a super jumbo Diet Coke, it's their dogs. The new trend sweeping the nation is doggy yoga.
Oh no.
Certified yoga instructors will put Rex through a series of yoga poses designed specifically for man's best friend. Of course, most of the poses just end up being downward facing dog.
You do that, Jerry? I've seen your dog.
They're really good at that.
Yeah. They are really good at that, aren't they?
No. Yeah. The only yoga move my dog knows is sleeping for 23 straight hours. If that was a yoga pose, he would be a world master.
They don't need yoga. They already exercise enough. Well, they should anyway.
Right. But again, if the Americans aren't walking, the dogs aren't walking, you got to get Fido into shape.
Well, that's why you hire a dog walker.
That's true.
Why hire a dog walker when you can hire a doggy yoga instructor? You see, it's trendy and it's upscale. And it sounds nice.
Yeah, but just
doggy
think about
yoga.
How expensive are those doggy clothes going to be,
The doggy yoga pants? Yeah. And will they be see-through? Who knows? Ooh, better have Fido bend over before you let it out of the store.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I knew you would.
Funny news story there.
And now you know. And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature. Xander Demos' guitar style ranges from the beautifully melodic to the jaw-dropping. He talked about this, and everything in between, with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are really honored to have on here Xander Demos. And he is a guitar player extraordinaire from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. How you doing, Xander?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Hey, you know what? Doing really good. So, just have your album re-released.
Yep.
And didn't you just recently join a new band?
I formed a new one. Basically, what I did was I kind of reformed my my solo band. And plus I'm also a member of Sabbath Judas Sabbath, which is James Rivera's band from Texas. And we're actually playing our first show together this Friday and Saturday. We're doing back-to-back shows, one in Akron and one in Pittsburgh, and then my solo band's opening the show in Pittsburgh, so that's it gives us a chance to get out there and do some cool stuff. It's a different type of band now because we actually have a vocalist instead of just four guys playing instruments, and so it's different.
And so, you re-released the album Guitar Arcadia?
Yes.
And the original title was The Road to Guitar Arcadia?
No, I'll give you the background of that. Late sure. In 2009, I recorded Road to Guitarcadia as a demo / EP kind of preview to the because I always knew the full length album was going to be called Guitarcadia. I always liked that title. You're going to probably get my dogs growling in the background here.
That's all right. Well, you are the second person we talked to a country singer, Doug Briney. In Alaska last night, and his dog was just barking away at some bear or something.
Nice. So yeah, James putting this project together. I mean, I think it's really cool that he did the he did the project this way. And the fun stuff, of course, to me though, is the Priest stuff, because we're doing like Nightcrawler and Judas Rising and Painkiller and like all of these really cool Priest songs. Like that are all post Dave Holland era, like Scott Travis from Racer X, he joined the band, back in like 1990 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And Judas Priest sounded like a different band from the time that he joined, without any disrespect for the old drummer. It was still a matter of like, kind of taking Priest to the next level. And, the drummer for Sabbath Judas Sabbath for our chapter is actually the drummer for my solo band. His name's Jeff Anzalone. He's unbelievable.
Yeah. I can't wait to hear it. Hey, let's talk about some of your stuff. Like Chase the Sun, or how about your new single, White Knuckle Driving?
Okay. Well, that White Knuckle Driving, believe it or not, is actually that riff. The main riff of the song is about 15 years old. And it was just like a riff without a home for the longest time. And it was kind of funny because I always knew that I wanted that to be like a theme for an instrumental. And I was in a band like some years ago, like in the mid-90s, and we were messing around with that. I said, I have this cool riff, and we actually used it as part of like an interlude for a guitar solo, and it's like I was doing like in harmony with a keyboard player that we had because it was a prog band. So we were like a Dream Theater wannabe band, and which isn't a bad place to be musically. But so that song, I was pulling that riff out in the studio one night and I said, I'm going to write a song around this. And I kind of started putting some other parts I had together, and I said, it's in drop D or whatever. And you put it together. When I did, I was like, wow, this actually sounds kind of cool, the way it is, And then I brought, my keyboard player, drummer, and bassist in, and they were, I said, okay, here's a song. It's kind of pieced out like this. Tell me what you think. Great. And they just started going down, everyone started laying down some really cool parts for it. And I mean, that's how the song came together. So it was kind of a cool studio tune, actually, before it was anything else.
Well, yeah, well, I certainly enjoyed it. And we'll take a listen to it a little bit right now. Thank you.
that was great, man. Hey, so you know what? I see here that you know, you've been getting a lot of airplay in Brazil, Russia, Denmark, UK, man, like all over the world, huh?
Now, that's what I've been hearing. I think it's kind of cool. It's, you know, this kind of music is you know, is big, you know, is kind of big all over the place, you know? And once America maybe, you know, kind of gets back to their rock roots, it would be nice. But I think we're always trying to look to do something new, you know?
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know when we'll get back to it.
Well, maybe you can bring it back for us, Xander.
I would love to. Believe me. I would love, you know, it's, you know, when you go down the road of being an instrumental guitar player the first way out, a lot of people, you know, you can get pigeonholed and you're playing for, you know, a very niche group of people, you know?
Right.
And I mean, but that's not to say like for example, the G3 tour was some failure. It was a big success. You know, people like to see guys like Yngwie and Eric Johnson and Joe Satriani and Steve Vai and Paul Gilbert and all these players, you know, get up there and do their thing. And as long as you have that many people on the bill, I mean, it's, you know, it's a good thing. But that's also why the approach for like this next version of the band is to use a singer now, because it helps, you know, kind of reach out a little bit broader, because now it's, you know, I've always tried to basically pass off all of my material as, you know, songs, not just me wanking over like a drum machine. You know what I mean?
Right. And, you know, I think I think that is a fantastic idea, man. And I can't wait to hear your new stuff with, you know, with the vocals on it. You just automatically, you know, are just like, you know, like, oh yeah, I know that. That's cool. You know?
Yeah.
And even if you don't know who did it.
Well, yeah, I'm the kind of guy, when I hear something new and if it has this like huge hook, I'll be like, okay, does anybody know what song this is? And a lot of people just shrug their shoulders and they're like, no, I've heard it. I like it, but I don't know what it is. I'm like, well, come on. You know, it's work with me here. You know,
right. And, you know, Nirvana had a couple songs like that.
Nirvana.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they wrote, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Nirvana's at all, but they, I can't take away the fact that they wrote some incredibly infectious stuff. You know, there's no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because I actually bought a Nirvana album in the 90s when it came out, and only because they had that Smells Like Teen Spirit song, which I didn't even know what the title was, but the riff was just so infectious. And, you know, one side of the album was just phenomenal. And the other side was just
I mean, that album is full of like a lot of good hooks. I mean, you can see why, you know, it was successful. My utter complaint about that and the other stuff that came out in that time of the 90s was the fact that, like, I have a very strong opinion about all that stuff. And, you know, some people have been like, well, Xander, you're full of crap. And some people said, wow, I never thought about it that way. That's a good point. Even though I thought that was, I mean, if you don't mind, I'll share my opinion.
Go ahead.
Okay. My problem with, despite the fact that I will listen to that stuff on occasion and I appreciate it for what it is or what it was, my problem was the music industry at the time still had their claws around, you know, everybody. They still had two mediums. You had MTV and you had the radio. And at that point, they could say, you know what? We're sick of Warrant. We're sick of Trickster. We're sick of Poison. We're sick of Europe. We're going to make a whole bunch of this stuff, you know, and we're going to take these bands and we're going to thrust these people into the limelight. And we're going to tell the radio stations, or we're going to tell, you know, this outlet or that outlet to play this stuff over and over and over again. Okay, that's fine. But if you notice, I mean, really think about this for a second. Then all the people that liked that were kind of rallying against the Warrants and the Poisons and all the, you know, the pretty boy rock, right?
Right.
Okay, so all of a sudden, all of these bands like Blind Melon or Soundgarden or Nirvana were getting really, really big. And that's cool. And if you notice, a lot of those bands, they didn't want the popularity. Guys like Quiet Riot and Warrant and all those bands, they still wanted to be popular. It was a difference in personality, right?
Right.
So I guess the weirdest thing was is that as they rallied again to be like those kind of bands that were rallying against what they called corporate rock, like Journey and all that stuff, they became what they rallied against because they were being force-fed. They sat there and bitched for 10 years that Journey and Foreigner and all these other bands were force-fed to the public. Yet they were being force-fed on such a massive level that no one really realizes it, because it was played on two different types of radio stations, not just a rock radio station. It was played on pop. It was also played on rock, you know, and then it was being played on MTV in very heavy rotation, okay? So think about it.
No, you know what? I do see your point. It's an interesting point. You know, because I could think of the two biggest bands that came out of that era, which were Nirvana and Pearl Jam. And both those right. bands were like, we don't want to be famous and we don't want to, you know, to go on MTV, you know?
that was exactly it. And the sad part is there was a lot of great songwriting in there. But my biggest problem was the fact that people say, well, that music had real soul and what Warrant wrote didn't have any soul. See, I find that to be really ignorant to say that, because you're basically just saying, well, I was kind of an outcast, so, and I was pissed off in high school, so I don't want to be associated with what the popular people liked. But yet, when Nirvana was popular, that's all you heard people bitching about was, oh man, I wish Nirvana wasn't popular. It's like, look, you can't have it both ways. I'm sorry. So now what my point is to this, and I don't want to waste all this time talking about that, but
no, that's fine.
In 2012, or let's just call it the age of YouTube, uh-huh. many people have decided, you know what? I can basically turn on MTV and I can watch Snooki roll around and be a dumbass drunk. And or I can go to MTV 2 and basically be thrown nothing but hip hop and, you know, this down-tuned heavy metal. Or I can go to YouTube and, oh, hey, look, I'm going to pull up a Firehouse video and I'm going to watch that video 5 times in a row if I want, because no one can, I don't have to sit there and wait in front of the TV to get it.
Right. And you know, and the internet really has given not only everybody a voice, but it's given everybody a platform now. You can get the links on Xander Demos's music on justimagineinc.com, where he'll be a featured artist. And it's been so great talking to you, Xander. Just, you know, hey, it was a fascinating conversation. Fascinating conversation. And love the music.
Oh, thank you so much, Ed. I appreciate that. And I mean, I've had a great time. Anytime you want to chat again, just, you know, I'll be glad to do it.
Sounds great. We look forward to speaking with you again.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Xander Demos, visit us at our website at justimagineinc.com.
Tastes like the 4th of July, malt liquor on your breath, my. I love you, but I don't know why. You can be the boss, daddy, you can be the boss. Feels like a cake party back on the star.
Victoria Howard's book, Sex, Lies, and Someone Else's Picture, describes the good and bad of online dating. She shared some stories with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we are privileged to have on Victoria Howard. And she's an author, and she has her current new book is Sex, Lies, and Someone Else's Picture. Welcome, Victoria.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing really good. You know, I got your book. I read it. I loved it. And it's actually quite humorous.
Yeah, supposed to be. It's very true, too. That's the whole thing. It's all internet dating, and there are real life stories. I went behind the scenes, and I joined numerous internet dating sites and as myself, and went on these dates. And I told pretty much the men right away what I was doing, but it seemed like as soon as I would tell them I'm writing a book, they'd get up and leave.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were after one thing, or they were married, or their pictures were pictures that they send that were 10 years old. So it's just humorous. It's amazing that it's a $1 billion a year industry. It really is, and there's a lot of good in the book. I tell the good, the bad, and the ugly, and there are some ugly stories. Let me tell you.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners about some of it? Because it's so intriguing.
Well, the sex.
Why don't we start off with the good, and then we'll get to the bad, and then we'll go to the ugly. How does that sound?
Sounds good. That sounds good. Well, the good are dreams come true. There's two different stories in there that I really, really affected me. I thought they were wonderful. The one girl, she was a. She was a Scandinavian, and her mother died. Her mother was very young, and she died, and they're very poor. So this beautiful girl come over to the United States with $500 that she had. That's all she had. She went to Vegas, and on the plane, she read a book, and it was about dating millionaires. So well, this is, you know, this is a shot for me. So she went ahead and she signed up, and all these men started writing to her because she was gorgeous. But she said the one guy that that really caught her eye was everything she didn't want. He was short, he was fat, he was bald, but he was very rich, very old, and he said he wanted somebody in his life. He was a widower that he could take care of and just, you know, treat her like a queen. So she met him. She fell in love with him. This is an Anna Nicole Smith story.
Right.
And they moved to Florida. Make a long story short, 2 years later he died. And she's now, I met her, she's driving a baby blue Bentley. She lives in a 10,000 square foot home on the ocean. And she has a little Maltese called Lucky.
Wow. You know that so everybody was a winner on that. She was looking for a millionaire and...
She loved him, and that's what she wanted everyone to know. It was a pretty woman story.
Right.
But she really did love this guy. And another one is an older couple who both lost their spouses, and they were like in their 70s and 80s.
Uh-huh.
And they joined a site, and they met each other, and they fell in love, and they came to me and wanted their story told because they both said that, you know, there is love after losing somebody. So they were really good, really nice people. These were the good stories.
All right, let's move on to the bad.
Bad stories are bad. The one bad story was there was a girl from, I live in Florida, so the girl that was down here in Miami, she came here from a foreign country, that's all I'll say, and she came here with two little children because her husband died. She was like 28, two little baby boys. She was very, very protective of them and didn't have any family in Miami and stayed home with them, very poor. And finally, her girlfriend said, you know, you really need to get out there and date somebody because, you know, these kids need a father. So she met this one guy, and she really liked him, but she still was very cautious. So she brought him into her home, which was the first mistake, I say, because I give a lot of red lights.
Right.
Never bring a guy into your home. Never, you know, let them be around your children. I mean, until you really, really know them. She let this guy into her home. She got a part-time job. He started babysitting the boys, and needless to say, the ugliness come out because about 2 months later, when she was attending to her children in the bathtub, they were screaming, and she found out he was sexually molesting these babies.
Oh, okay.
So that is bad. So, you know, whoever's out there on dating sites, you know, I don't care if it's one night of lust that you're looking for or whatever, do not take the guy into your home and let him get around your children.
Good advice. You have a few of humorous stories in here as well.
Yeah, oh yeah. There's a lot of, especially mine. The guys I met were like, I just couldn't even believe it. They were characters. They really were. I mean, there are scam artists, too. And that's something else that is not just in Florida. It's everywhere. There are people that were taking people for money.
Right.
You know, this is something else that Internet dating, you only see the good things on TV, okay? You see that one out of five people are married and all these love stories. But there's a lot of bad. And that's why I wrote the book, because I want people to know that it's, you know, if you go into it with, hey, I'm going to have fun, I'm going to be cautious, I might make a lot of good friends, which I have done. I've met a lot of nice men that are my friends. But to find out, you know, Prince Charming or Princess Charming, it's very rare.
I see. I love the title of your chapter 5, I'm Not Married, My Wife Is.
Yeah. That happened to me. Guy came, and he came down from Orlando, and he, you know, told me he was a widower, and he kept coming every weekend, and he would drive down just for one day and would have dinner and always have to go back home. And I was wondering why he couldn't stay at a hotel around here. And he had to go home because of the dogs. He said the dogs. Well, right away, I mean, I've been around a while, so, you know, I'm thinking, okay, this guy, something's not right. Make a long story short, about four dates that we were having, we were sitting in a restaurant. And this lady walked up and said, oh, hey, how's your wife doing? I haven't seen you in church. What are you doing down here? And then he got real red. And as soon as she left, I was going to throw something at him because of being deceitful. And he said, you know what? He says, I said, I thought you weren't married. I thought she died. He says, no, I'm not married. My wife is. typical guy.
Well.
Well, it could go both ways. Let me tell you, you know, that's the thing about it. I'm very unbiased in this book. There's a lot of horror stories with women too, to men. And it's sad. It really is that people get taken.
Well, you know, the old Lonely Hearts thing, you know?
Well, that's it. Everybody wants that. We don't want to be alone. We weren't meant to be alone, okay? We were not meant to be alone. We weren't created to be by ourselves. But the thing about it is people settle just for anybody. They don't, you know, they don't wait for the right person, so they settle, and then 9 out of 10 times it doesn't work.
Well, you know, it was really kind of, you know, fascinating, you know, just to you know, it's reading your book was like getting a sneak into the whole thing from a bird's eye point of view without having to actually do it, you know?
Right. Well, these are all true stories, and they're all ages, and most of these people, they found out I was writing this book. This is the fifth book I've written, but this is one on internet dating, because it's funny because I have never been on an internet dating site, and I have had several people that have met their longtime companions, very few though, and some of them were married, now they're divorced, but most of them were like horror stories. So a couple people said, Vicki, you have to write a book on this. So in order to write the book, I had to go behind the scenes. And then after I did it as myself, I went incognito as a man, and that was, I went on I can't say the name of the dating site, but it was one that was free, and you didn't have to post a picture.
Right.
So I did, I went on, and I was Victoria, became Victor, and, you know, this, I was writing to these women, just because I wanted to see their side, besides myself. I wanted to see hear their stories and see how they felt about it. And I wrote to like 3 or 4 of them. And I felt like a liar, really, I did. And I didn't like doing it. But I made friends with one of them, and we're still friends after I told her that, you know, hey, this is the way it is, you know, because they all wanted to meet me. And I said, hey, I'm sorry, I have to fess up. I'm not the first one I said, I'm not a man, I'm really a woman. And she, her name was Mia, and she said, that's okay, Victoria, because I'm really not a woman. I'm a man.
Really?
Yeah. And she was, believe it or not, she was a drag queen in Miami.
Oh!
And when I saw her picture, I'm telling you, she was gorgeous. So I cannot believe this. So then when we, you know, said, hey, you know, this is a sort of like a joke, the joke was on Mia. So I went down to her drag queen show with a girlfriend of mine, and we could not believe this person. He was a she.
And sure enough,
really
the dude looked like a lady, huh?
And was gorgeous, I want to tell you. So I have all the stories in this book.
The book is called Sex Lies and Someone Else's Picture. Love that title.
Thank you. I do too. It's true.
It's by Victoria Howard. And where can people pick up copies of this?
They can go to Barnes & Noble, or they can just do it online. No reason to go out and waste gas. Just do it online. Go on Amazon. Any online retailer sells it.
Great.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, thank you, and have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
To learn more about Victoria Howard, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com. Oh,
We're Alive, a 2012 Audi Award finalist. This exciting audio drama is based on an immensely popular podcast that has received hundreds of positive reviews and has had over 4 million downloads and counting. For Army Reserve Soldier Michael Cross, the world as he knows it ends in an instant. One minute he's in college, and the next rioters are roaming the highways around him, breaking into cars and literally tearing people apart. This is the day the dead walk. This is the world of We're Alive.
As I recall, the months leading up to when this all began weren't much to remember. My unit returned home earlier that year from our tour in Iraq. I had spent 365 on ground working as military intelligence. Our group came up with those playing cards you saw in the news, the 52 most wanted. I was a hard charge PFC back then, but that was the first tour. After our third, I was the tired and depressed sergeant. Nothing scared me back then. I didn't fear death or what might be on the other side if today was my last day. That was then, and this is now. I write this, not really for anyone to read, but for my own sanity. Maybe if I go over it again from the beginning, it might make more sense to me. And then again, maybe not. I was 27 at the time and in my fourth year in college. I started my freshman year in 2001, almost 8 years ago now. I remember the date as it was burned into my head, May 8th, 2009.
Hey, Michael, where are you going?
Class.
Did you study for the quiz today?
No, not really.
Neither did I.
Yeah, well, all right.
Hey, are you going to the Omega party this weekend? It's going to be so awesome, and I thought you might want to go with
me. No, don't want to. But thanks, though.
Why not?
What, is it better to say, oh, okay, maybe well another time?
Geez, you don't have to be such a jerk about it.
I was direct. How's that being a jerk?
Once you're done, go ahead and put your papers up here, and you guys are free to go.
What the hell?
Did you hear that?
You know, it's probably just the construction going on next door. Now, please, just...
That's not construction.
Come on, take your seat. Hey, you know, there's not going to be any makeups for this quiz if you go. I'm serious.
I remember seeing everyone gathered around the television. I expected a bombing or maybe even another attack on U.S. soil. Part of me was planning for the worst, but nothing could have prepared me for what I saw.
Is now responding. Oh my god, they're attacking the police officers. The attackers seem to have no hesitation as
what the hell is going on? That's only like 20 miles from here. Do you think it's gonna reach us?
Hello?
Michael, it's Lieutenant Angel. Where are you?
I'm at school right now. What's going on?
We need you to come to the unit right away.
Is this about what's on the TV?
I'm stuck in traffic, so I have no idea. I've just got a phone call from the commander, and now I'm calling you. How long till you can get here?
Maybe 30 minutes, but I don't have my uniform.
Don't worry about those. We have a couple spare in the unit. Just get there as fast as you can.
All right, I'm on my way.
We're Alive is a modern rendition of an old-school medium. Maintaining a style that is both retro and contemporary, the radio drama will give horror fans the campy, kitschy style they like, but it also provides a variety of characters and development to keep general audiences engaged, says TheExaminer.com. K.C. Wayland has produced numerous short films and a documentary about his journeys overseas after enlisting in the Army that won many awards, including Best Student Film at the Tiburon International Film Festival. He currently works at Dodge College of Film and Media Arts as the Digital Applications Specialist. In his time away from work, he continues to write, produce, edit, and direct the award-winning audio drama serial, We're Alive. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Lipstick junkie debunked the all in one. She came back wearing a smile, looking like someone drugged me. They wanted to unplug me. No one here is on trial. It's just a turnaround and we go.
Behind me now, Stay There, is a Just Imagine It, Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0101. 1-800-273-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Charlie Stanton. We like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook and remember to get behind me.
Now, stay there.
Tick tock, I want to rock you like the 80s. Clock blocking isn't allowed.